I'm going to talk about similar work along the lines of what has been discussed so far, namely using scattering amplitudes to describe binary in spirals. So this talk is really about using the tools of quantum field theory to develop precision gravitational wave science. Okay? So leveraging tools that we've used, for example, in analyzing processes at the LHC for precision gravitational wave science. And I'm going to be focusing on some aspects of my work. This now has been a rapidly developing field. I fortunately cannot cover everyone else's work, but there's a lot of ongoing things right now. So I'll touch upon mainly my work with Cliff Chung, Ira Rothstein, V. Byrne, Radu Roygan, Chashen Chen, Mao Zheng, Naba Shah, Julio Parra Martinez, and Michel Roof. Okay. And of course, the goal is to help with pushing the idea that we can do precision gravitational wave science, of which you know that there has been really decades of effort trying to understand how to extract binary in spiral solutions from Einstein's equation. And in this regard, there have been many, many complementary approaches, namely post-Newtonian, for example, expanding in small g and small velocity of these in spiraling black holes. There's also the self-force approach, which is sort of can be viewed as an expansion about a Schwarzschild background systematically in powers of a small mass ratio over a large mass ratio. And of course, there's numerical relativity. But as a lot of you know, the precision demands of future generation, for example, the third generation gravitational wave detectors will really pose a challenge to theory, in particular, for example, in the post-Newtonian expansion, we want up to 6 PN corrections, where currently the state of the art is 4 PN, perhaps 5 PN soon, or if not already known. I heard that 5 PN results are very close to being completed. And in for self-force, for example, we know how to do one self-force very well. There have been recent, very important progress in pushing second-order self-force, as we've heard, but this is something that people are still working very hard on. So in other words, there's been decades of effort, and this is just to say that the problem is hard. Okay. Our approach to a hard problem has been to try to turn it into an easier problem. And that is to consider, instead of bound orbits, such as the picture you see on the left, we consider instead scattering orbits, such as the picture you see on the right. This is a good idea for a number of reasons. First of all, scattering is just much simpler. One reason is because it is fully relativistic, and therefore you have Lorentz invariance, another symmetry manifest, and that's always good. And second, because there's a lot of technology built in the past decades for understanding scattering processes, for example, at the LHC. And we can harness these tools, for example, on-shell mesh methods that really focus on gauge invariant quantities, advanced multi-loop integration that have been used in QCD, and also effective field theory, which is really following along the lines of the pioneering work of Walter Goldberger and Ira Rothstein. Okay, so there's a lot of technology that we can use for scattering. And finally, and most importantly perhaps, is that when we consider scattering, we're not really considering an altogether different problem. A lot of the aspects of scattering are immediately transferable or directly useful for the bound problem, okay? And so for example, in my work with Cliff Chung and Ira Rothstein, we used effective field theory to establish this connection. There's also nice work by Callan in Porto thinking about this from the perspective of analytic continuation, for example. Okay, but this is the basic idea that we want to understand aspects of binary in spirals by considering scattering processes, as you've heard from Justin, for example. Okay, so for the rest of the talk, I just want to address two questions, which is that does this strategy actually work? That's the first question. And the second question is, if we are after benchmarks for third generation detectors, does this strategy actually scale? Okay, so here is a map of perturbation theory. I will focus this discussion because of what results we have so far on the conservative dynamics without radiative effects. So this is the corrections of order G and of order V, okay? So if you're thinking in terms of post-Newtonian corrections, then this is the kind of corrections that you would have at 4pn. So this would be 0pn, 1pn, 2pn, 3pn, 4pn, and so on. If we want 6pn, then we would like to have these corrections right here shaded in the bigger triangle, okay? The approach using scattering amplitudes does not expand in small v. So instead we expand in small g and do get the corrections to all orders in velocity. So for example, in this first work with Cliff Chung and Ira Rothstein, we just did the simplest case of tree level and one loop scattering, which of course has been known since the early 1980s from Westphal's work, because it's completely transcribable to a scattering angle. But you see here that these are the order G and order G squared corrections to all orders of velocity. In the next work with Zvi Byrne, Radu Raiban, Chachin Chen, and Mao Zhang, we completed the order G cubed correction. And this was a new result in general relativity. These functions were previously unknown. Okay? And more recently, with new collaborators, Julio Parra Martinez and Misha Roof, we did the next order G fourth, which is a three loop calculation, if you're thinking about loops. And again, it's only the conservative corrections due to potential modes. Okay, so no radiative effects so far, at least on this plane, okay? But you see here that so far it seems to be working. The strategy, the tools of hydrogen physics can actually produce new results that are directly useful, in other words, directly transcribable on this plane. And you can check that the overlap between this red triangle and the green, red rectangle and the green triangle completely match up. So they're in different gauges, but of course you can do a canonical transformation or you can compute gauge invariant observables and they would completely line up. So the main point is that it works, you get new results, and they're directly useful for the binary inspired problem. In fact, one thing we've been very happy with is that people in this community have picked up on these results. So for example, here are some plots from a paper by Antonelli and company showing our tree level correction or our one loop correction and our two loop correction compared against benchmarks from EOB and also numerical relativity, okay? So here you can see that the order G, G squared, G cubed are indeed improving towards numerical relativity, but are nowhere close, for example, benchmarks used for actual waveform production from using EOB. In this second plot here, you can see that there's an interesting possibility of actually using these post-Minkowskian results or all orders in V results into EOB, and that would get you this purple dashed curve, which is getting close to numerical relativity, okay? More recently, these plots have been updated to include, for example, the 4pm or three loop result, the order g to the four result that we recently computed. And you can see here that that's shown in the orange solid line here, and it gets pretty close even to EOB. And numerical relativity, of course, it improves to get closer to numerical relativity. And again, on this second slide here, or second panel here, you can see that including these 4pm results into EOB also shows the possibility of improving waveforms, okay? And so we've been very happy that people in this community have been continually encouraging us to pursue this line of research. Checks on our results. There's been a lot of checks. Let me just mention a few. The first check was done by Beanie and Company. They actually just checked the 5PN piece of the G cube result. So just one velocity order in that whole velocity tower. But this was, I like to highlight this check for two reasons. One, because it was one of the first ones. But secondly, this exchange of ideas between our methods coming from the high energy theory and general relativity led to them thinking about really new methods for obtaining PN corrections. And now they call it the tutti frutti method, which has been very, very powerful. A second check is that Thibault pointed out some funny features in the high energy limit, but was later understood to be related to radiation. And there's a nice story here, which I won't get into, but I'd like just to like to mention. At 4 p.m., the only check so far has been the 6PN piece of the order G to the 4 result by Bloomline Company. Aside from results that we hope can be directly used by gravitational wave analysis, we are also interested in this business in looking for theoretical structures. For example, one interesting thing that we've been learning is just the connection between scattering amplitudes and classical mechanics. So scattering amplitudes in a classical limit and quantities that we know and love in classical mechanics. So for example, here is a nice equation which relates the classical amplitude to a quantity containing the radial action. So you'll see that the radial action is directly related to the amplitude. Okay. Another nice thing about studying binary dynamics in this way is that you can take the high energy limit. If you were just using PN, then there's no high energy limit to take. But here you have a full function, and you can take actually Mandelstam S to be large. And this is exactly what led Thibault to and this other group to understand how these logs or these singularities in the high energy limit are related to radiation. Okay, so there's another, there are more knobs you can play with in understanding structures in the results. Finally, maybe a small point is that because we're using, focusing only on shell or gauge invariant quantities and also our expressions are relativistic, then they're very much simpler and compact. Okay, so this is nice. And also has the ability to expose really new features in amplitudes. So for example, it's very naturally exposed when you compute these amplitudes because of basic aspects like dimensional analysis and relativity that the mass dependence in these amplitudes are very, very simple. So for example, you see the tree level dependence is just M1 squared, M2 squared. One loop dependence is the M1 cubed all the way down to just the flip of that, and so on and so forth. So what you learn here is that the tree level and the one loop results are completely contained in zero SF, while the two loop and the three loop results start to contain one SF. And that's why those results were new, because we were starting to probe one SF results for scattering. And if we were to do, for example, G5 and G6, then we would start to probe second order self force terms for scattering. On our end, what this means is that if we were to sum all these zero SF terms to all orders in G, that would amount to computing these diagrams, which is actually something very hard, very hard to do from the amplitudes perspective without encoding, for example, the Schwarzschild solution. And so that said, self-force results are very, very magical from our perspective because they're all orders in G, and that's something that is not obvious how to do from the amplitude side. Okay.
Mikhail, you are almost into question time.
Okay, yeah, let me just wrap up. So the question of does it scale? There's of course the fact that it's just a hard problem, but also because this approach inherently also has its own issues, namely that if you were to write down the Einstein-Hilbert action and use Feynman diagrams, then that would entail a lot of terms. Secondly, if I'm proposing a method that requires loop calculation, then you should be suspicious because loops are hard. So this is something that we've really been focusing on, trying to get a pipeline that's scalable. And here's where all the methods of the high energy physics community really shine. In particular, we like to use on-shell methods instead of Feynman diagrams so that we could focus immediately on gauge invariant quantities. We really try to harness as much as possible the mature technology from QCD loop integration. And finally, we use effective field theory to hone in immediately on the terms that we want and not any of the quantum terms, for example. And so throughout this pipeline, which I won't comment on because I don't have time, the classical limit is taken at the very earliest stages. So at each of these stages, starting from the basic amplitude all the way down to Hamiltonian that describes the binary, the classical limit is taken. Okay, so let me just wrap up. So gravitational wave science has opened up this new interesting direction in theoretical high energy physics, leveraging quantum field theory to enable precision gravitational wave science. And from our perspective, the classical binary dynamic problem has really the hallmarks of a great problem in theoretical high energy physics. There is a very important experimental application. There is a chance to explore a new theoretical landscape of this relation between scattering amplitudes and classical dynamics. And finally, you get to do really fun calculations in quantum field theory that are useful for gravitational wave science, hopefully. So that this was just a really small piece of now a growing body of work. This program is new. I haven't talked about applications to tidal effects, spin, their very new results in radiation, so on. I'll stop there.